Don't forget about the hair.
No, and eyebrow.
bit of spit and polish there, William, and you'll be looking like royalty in no time.
I have enough spit, thank you. Someone suggested I actually braid my eyebrow.
Your eyebrow.
That was rather rude.
Singular.
I thought that was rather rude. Anyway.
It is a little.
such as one's life.
How are you, Prince William?
Let's get this thing going. Very well, Duncan. Thank you. And how are you down there in the freezing Cape?
Yeah, I'm freezing. Ready for summer in June.
Yeah. I agree with you. I don't like this cold. Warmness is who I am. It's part of my caring and giving nature.
Have you had any nice warm EVs to drive around lately?
No, I haven't actually. But we're at a launch with a new energy vehicle, which we'll cover in the news section as we come up with a new BYD, which is an interesting vehicle. But yeah,
shall we start with the news?
Let's start off with the news, but no, before we get to the news, let's start off with a bit of a rant, because, you know,
rant before we get into things. Go for it.
Well, you know, let's just get it out of the way with and over, and then we can get on with the fun stuff. Because, you know, as often happens when one's driving in traffic, well, for me anyway, I spend a lot of time thinking about how the world can be immediately improved if Prince William was allowed to take over. I'd immediately ensure that everyone lives in the same little world of pink unicorns and fluffy rainbows that I do. And my thought on the four-lane highway stuck in the fast lane going slower than the three lanes to my left was that this nonsense about how South Africans drive and this mythical thing called pass left, keep right type thing, just keep left, pass right is the actual way of doing it, but we actually don't do it. We pass right and keep left. No, I got that wrong, but keep left, pass right.
and they let you drive.
Even if I can't get it right now, it's just ruined my entire rant. But the thing is easily solved. It is easily solved, Duncan. All we have to do is one very, very simple little thing in South Africa, and that's to ban the left indicator. Delete it. And if you use it, you're fined. If I had my way, you'd be taken out the car and shot. And the reason I say that is because if you are undertaken – and the word undertaken is probably new to a whole bunch of people who use the road, because we always overtake, right? When you pass someone and you overtake them, you move into the right-hand lane and you drive past them, that's an overtake. An undertake is when you move into the left-hand lane and you go past them on the left. And if you are undertaken on the highway, you're in the wrong lane. You're in the wrong. And if you drive according to the rules of the road, keeping left, passing right, you don't need a left-hand indicator. In theory, you should be able to immediately at any point in time get into the left lane without even having to look. There should never be anyone in that position. It improves safety. It improves functionality of the roads in terms of the fact that the traffic flows become optimized and you actually end up with traffic going faster, because if you have someone sitting in the second to fast lane moving slow and being undertaken, it slows everyone behind them down for kilometers on end. You could see it. Just look into your rear view mirror once you've passed someone who's sitting in the second to fast lane. You don't need to indicate going left when you're at a stop street or at a robot. If you're turning left, you just turn left because there's no one in your way there. So I just want people to think about this a little bit when you're actually on the highway. And if you're being undertaken on the highway, you're in the wrong lane, you muppet. Move over. Keep left.
Out of interest, is undertaking, as you call it, sounds too much like the word undertaker, but is undertaking actually, allowed? Is that allowed under our traffic laws?
Legally, no. No, you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to undertake, strictly speaking. But you know, it's one of those things that it's always about enforcement. Yeah. So you know.
So, but if you're going to ban the left, if you're going to ban the left indicator, you'd have to ban undertaking.
Yes, correct. That's exactly it. Mm. That's exactly okay. it. So in other words, you would not be allowed to actually undertake someone. You have to move behind them, flash your lights, make them move over so you can overtake mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. And that would make everyone's lives immediately better.
Great idea, William, but I can't see it working in practice.
Sadly not. But it got me to thinking, you know, it's a case of I would have so much footage if I had my dash cam that I could fill YouTube mm-hmm. with footage of where this needs to go. And the reason I mentioned this is as an interesting sort of little segue into AI footage dash cams. And I thought, well, let's have a chat to Tracker, because Tracker does all of this. And I lined up a fascinating interview with the MD of Tracker, Dylan Fernando. And mm-hmm. what we got into in terms of the data that's available on what we used to think of as just something that tells you where your car is has changed completely. The space has moved on at quite an incredible rate. And I think now is a nice time just to have a listen to that interview with Dylan to hear what he has to say about AI, data, and Tracker in general. Well, dear and valued readers, it's William from Tech Central again, and I have another one of my famous interviews coming up. And this one is, let's just say, eventually coming up, but we won't get into the details of that. Opposite me, I have Mr. Dylan Fernando, and he is the MD CEO, big chief of Tracker South Africa. Welcome, Dylan. Thank you for joining us on this podcast. I won't say the word eventually again, but let's just all on me. But let's get things going. Tracker, as a company, just briefly for our viewers, just tell us what Tracker does.
So first,
in a nutshell,
thank you for having me on.
It's genuine pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you. Tracker, 29 years as part of South Africa's history. Looking after the people of this country, recovering their assets, as well as the individual, which is critically important. We are celebrating our 30th year this year,
good heavens, 1st
of October. So, as I've mentioned earlier, we've been an integral part of who South Africa is and looking after the society in general. Nationwide, other parts of Africa as well, but really the essence is we are a proudly South African company.
I can't believe it's been 30 years. I mean, honestly, if you'd put a gun against my head, I would have said maybe 10, maybe 15 when Tracker just sort of, you know, sort of entered my consciousness as basically a vehicle tagging device that allows you to keep track of where your vehicle is should someone that doesn't own it decide to own it without your permission. And Tracker's built on from that over the years, and obviously, you know, so the advent of technology is really what I'd like to discuss with you today.
Of course.
In terms of what you do with all that data that you gather from these devices that are monitoring our vehicles and keeping them safe.
So I think that's one of the most intrinsically important questions as asked in any of the interviews I do. What do we do with data? Well, as an organization or as a company, do I just give you the data? People always talk about data to say, we need data. Okay, we have hundreds of millions of data points a day.
Yeah.
You generate, as an organization, thousands and thousands of data points. So when I sit with you and I can present you your data, the inevitable question is, please do, or can you, and what does it look like? And then we do, and then you say, oh,
it's
gosh.
It's not what I want.
Exactly. What on earth do I do with this? So it's way more than just a conversation around data. It's the ability for us to understand what you're looking for and then present that data in a format you can actually use. And that's the difference. The data conversation is becoming so intrinsic to what we do day to day. But it's really not about data. It's about the ability for you to utilize your data within your business.
So obviously with the advent of AI, you know, everyone's talking about AI and AI being very good at big data manipulation. How's that impacting on your business? What's it doing in enhancing your data manipulation presentation to your clients?
So AI is really important as long as you've got the infrastructure to be able to utilize AI.
Uh-huh.
Just putting AI into a business doesn't necessarily get you to the state you need to be. Mm-hmm. Do I think it's prudent to have AI and be part of the AI culture and the movement forward? Absolutely. But it's in conjunction with the ability to give you data in a form that you can utilize. So, simple example. I can give you a driver statistic. that driver drives X amount of kilometres per year, he drives at X speed or she drives at X speed, they go in specific directions, they are able to utilise a route that's given. Where AI then comes into its own, fundamentally, is if you have a riot or you have looting, for example, in a specific section on the M2 or the N3, the ability for AI to say, gosh, there's a problem, reroute you now, be able to feed that to the driver and then have the driver partake from his normal route and be safe in his ability to drive around that problem is where AI really comes in. So it's not just about saying, what does AI do? It's about the utilization of having the product to be able to utilize AI.
It's very interesting that you raise that, because it's apparent to me that trackers become from a recovery service of your asset that's already gone. And we were talking about my mics, I've just knocked it. Sorry, everyone. As opposed to a recovery of an asset from an asset protection point of view, the asset's gone, you go and recover it.
Absolutely.
You're now looking at it as an asset, as a pre-recovery prevention. In other words, you're now looking forward to preventing scenarios where your asset would be at risk. And that's very interesting to me, because it says that now that tracker is not just a recovery mechanism or recovery service. It's a far more integrated service that one's offering as a result of the data points that you're able to now analyze and interpret almost in real time for your clients. So and also, you know, you're talking about driver behavior and that kind of thing. So all of that is now extending the value proposition, really, isn't it? And I mean, so with all that already on board, where's it going to go in the future? That's what's sitting in the back of my mind. Are we going to have real-time video monitoring? Are you going to have a tracker cam on my dashboard that can record what's happening in the event of an accident? You know, the insurers can have a look or whatever it is.
So we've already got all those particular features in the different range of cameras that we have.
Shows you how far behind I am.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think your question is so intrinsically elegant in the way it's pitched, because
I've never been called elegant before, but I'll take it. Thank you.
if you think about what Tracker did about a year ago, we've been as part of the B2B space for a very long period of time.
Mm.
We actually took a step back and said, can we sell you a camera? Yes, we can. Can we sell you a camera that does something? Yes, it does the something. But what we actually said is there something relevant to our customers?
Mm.
To the end users and function. I love the point you've brought up about the fact that we do recovery. It's standard to us. We do it better than anyone else or anybody else in the country. But it's not about that. It's about exactly what you said. It's about giving you options before something happens to you. So, as I mentioned, we went back to our customers about a year ago and said, what is it you're looking for? So Tracker has become an end-to-end company. And what do I mean by that? It means that we can start you from a simple tracking device, which does exactly what it says on the box.
Yeah.
We will come and recover you. We'll understand where you are. We'll understand what processes that you're following. We'll make sure that you are looked after to an end process. And so we start from tracking. We will finish up from every piece of technology that you fundamentally need as a B2B organization. So do you need a cell phone? Do you need a tablet? Do you need an engine management system? Mm. Do you need everything in between, or can you just take a camera and place it up on your dashboard? We can supply individual parts, or we are now an end-to-end organization. And that then goes back to the question you asked about what do you do with the data?
Mm.
Because we have every piece of information pertinent to you as an organization. We can then supply that to you in a usable format. So you can fundamentally make a decision. Are your trucks the right trucks for you? Do you need to upgrade them? Do you need to downgrade them? Can you get cheaper versions of that? Because your engine management system will now manage that process.
Mm.
Your tablet will tell you at any one time, this is where you are, this is what you're doing, this is how you're driving. Your camera will tell you, to the question you've asked as well, what information do you need from the camera? So does it need to be forward-facing? Does it need to be rear-facing?
Of course.
Does it need to be both?
Of course.
Is it a continuous monitoring of the driver and the road? Absolutely. Is it a ability to say, okay, we're reportedly moving towards an accident or there's an issue and it needs to then videotape a specific section in time to give you the ability to record and therefore then understand what went on? Absolutely.
Mm.
Is it something intrinsically different, such as we're doing at the moment with alcohol monitoring.
Mm.
So the driver gets into the cab. In the old days when I used to do these things, if you wanted to start the truck, you physically had to breathe into a little nozzle.
Yes, yes.
And it would tell you, okay, there's no alcohol in your system, you can drive.
You can drive.
Don't need that anymore.
Really?
The ability for us to breathe normally as human beings when we get into a cab, because we have a sensor at the back of the camera, if you need to go to that level of extreme, will now, the normal breathing will tell you that person is over the limit or what the alcohol limit is. And so we are just not ubiquitously that company which says, we will give you a camera or we will give you a tracking device. We are end-to-end, depending on what you want. And we will provide a solution that covers your needs as an organization.
I'm not sure if I'm scared by this or excited. I think possibly a little bit of both. You know, the levels of sophistication that this can go to is enormous. But is TrackAnow primarily B2B or are you looking at B2C? Is there a consumer-related product for little old I on the road?
We've always been both.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, there is a B2C product now that's relevant to you. I have one in my car. Just because the interesting way we drive in South Africa, I've been here 25 years, has changed.
The interesting way we drive in South Africa. I'm going to file that away and use that in the future. As opposed to, we have a bunch of maniacs on our road who don't know how to drive.
I would never say that because I've lived around the world. So people drive differently for the different road conditions.
Fair comment.
But the interesting way we drive here and our fellow South Africans utilized their vehicles has driven me to put a camera in the front of my car. Fundamentally, yes. Should anything happen, at least it gives me the opportunity to say, as an insured driver on the road, this is what's happened. The insurance claim should be a lot easier and a lot quicker and processed more quickly.
Correct. So in terms of the data monitoring, another thought that just randomly triggered in my mind whilst we were talking, so I'm just going off my question stream a little bit here, is that when we were talking to the EV guys, so the EV guys are very interested in route information specifically. They want to know where the hills are, where the chargers are, where the network is. Is there a duplication of effort in terms of understanding the geolocation data of a vehicle at any given time? You must have all that data on hand immediately. And if the EV guys now have to customize a system, why don't they just come to you and say, can we borrow your data collection service, dear tracker, and engage with you that way? It saves them a whole lot of back-end development. You've already got all the information, and just dovetailing it with the charging infrastructure layout specific to the EV guys' needs must be a no-brainer for you guys.
It is a no-brainer for us, and we're already doing it.
There we go. Damn it. All my good ideas gone. Used.
Your ideas are wonderful.
I thought I was a pioneer in this space, but clearly I've got a lot of catch-up to do.
No, far from it. I mean, I've been dealing with the EV guys for a lifetime, going back and forth, trying for the last 25-odd years.
Good heavens.
EV is a different concept. It will take off our fuel. Excuse me, I'm sorry. It has already taken off. Yeah. I apologize. The reality is, you know, as human beings, we pay for fuel like everybody else has to.
Mm.
I watched the diesel price go up 6 rands a liter the other week, and I said to my wife as the numbers were flying around on the petrol pump, my gosh, I should have 3 sevens shortly and win something. Because
you do feel like it's a bit of a lottery.
And then the gentleman filling the car comes up and gives you the bill, and you're thinking, wow, well, my kids aren't going to school next month. I'm joking, obviously. But the reality is, EV is a conversation around what do you do with the information again? And we're dealing with the EV companies at source, so in China and other locations. EV, I'm sure, as big as the market is already for them, as petrol prices in terms of both diesel and unleaded or leaded petrol goes up, will become more and more prevalent. The reality is, it's lovely to have a nice car, but can you afford to run the car at the end of the day?
Well, and ROI on EVs is the accountants love it because it's mathematics. It's this and it's this, and there's no disputes about it. It's in black and white. You know, you can see the savings on paper. So that's our bent on this particular channel, is, you know, EV and tech. So where to next for Tracker? I mean, you've got everything covered. You're looking at EVs. You've done all this stuff. I mean, what's possibly left for you guys to conquer?
I think there's an awful lot more for us to conquer. If I take a step back since when I joined the organisation and how the organisation has changed, we've really looked at our business model. We're far more technology focused. Maybe in the past, we've done all the right things, but now we're moving to that technology space. We've always been there.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have the information and data and the processes to take us to that next stage. We talked earlier about us providing B2C and, more, as importantly, B2B customers with information.
Yeah.
Even as a B2C customer, as ridiculous as it sounds, we talked about the fact of having a camera in your car.
Yeah.
There is a need and a requirement for having a camera in your car, especially from an insurance perspective, but actually you'd like to know what on earth that provides you. As a monthly rental, what are you getting for your information? So the ability to monitor and map and be linked into the tracking system is actually a step in the right direction for B2C customers. B2B is obvious, but the B2C customer as well gets a lot of intrinsic value from that. If I then look at, from a technology perspective, what's next? The ability for us to move into AI, the ability for us to drive conversation in our B2B space. I've already mentioned we are now an end-to-end organization. Mm. That's been driven by the ability for us to step into that technology market. When I talk about Tracker, it's not purely a tracking company anymore.
Yeah.
We do so much more than that, and we'll continue to do that. The thought process around expansion is obviously critically important to us. The thought process around partnerships. I don't necessarily want to go into too much detail because that's our strategy going forward, but that fundamentally drives who we are as an organization. It's not simply about tracking anymore. We have the technology to do other things.
I would leave it there, but I've got one last little question, which I have to ask. The protection of personal information in the B2C space.
Yes.
How do you safeguard me driving like a lunatic when I have a test car on test and I just want to see what it can do and handle and all that? How do I ensure that my data is kept private and not shared amongst others? Or is that inherently built into your platforms?
It's inherently built into the platforms. Please forget, we take our responsibilities to you as an individual incredibly seriously.
Hmm.
We are monitored by Poppy and so many other companies.
And there's a ream of compliance paperwork that's
down straight.
Yes.
Absolutely. But we take those requirements unbelievably seriously. We do not share your information with anybody unless you've given us permission to do it in a specific format for your specific requirements. There is no ambiguity to that statement. We do not share people's personal data. By law, we cannot.
This gladdens my heart and makes me pleased. Delon, I think we can leave it there. Thank you so much. What a fascinating conversation. I look forward to seeing more of Tracker in the future.
It's a pleasure.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
And so have I. Thank you for your time.
So, William, what do you make of Dylan's comments there?
Well, I mean, it's data gathering and processing, isn't it? And the secret to it is you can gather a lot of data, but what do you do with it? How do you present it in a way that's meaningful? You know, so for me, it was how do we record all these people that need to be taken, you know, given a fine for sitting in the position where people are undertaking them on the highway. So it's such an interesting proposition because that can actually be done these days. But you've just got to configure all the data around how you get it into ship-shape format. And mm-hmm. I think we're just scratching at the surface of where AI is going to go in all of this. It's actually really interesting because the other thought that is sort of triggered, I'm on a large WhatsApp group for sound quality in cars, not sound pressure levels. I mean, if you've ever been to a sound pressure level contest in South Africa, you know. I've seen a Toyota Hilux Bucky, right, which had a strengthening pole running from the ceiling of the vehicle down to the middle of the dash. And that pole is like, you know, 50 mil iron pipe is there to prevent, and wait for it, the front windshield from popping out of the car. Such as the sound pressure levels that are generated by these guys. I mean, it's nuts. If you actually sat in the car whilst they're playing those things at full volume, they'd vacuum you out. Your internal organs would just be shredded. It's ridiculous. Why do it? Because they can. But the point of the matter is that I'm on the sound quality group, right? Which is a different thing entirely. And One of the questions was posed on the group, would someone please install a sound system into my EV? And I thought, well, that's an interesting thing. And then the responses come back from, you know, guys that actually install these systems in cars. I mean, these are car guys. And one of the responses, shall remain nameless, was that we don't work on EVs because we're scared we're going to, A, damage the electrical architecture and, B, electrocute ourselves. And I was like, but guys, EVs have 12-volt systems that are exactly the same. It's only the drive motor that changes as an EV. And I thought, my word, we've actually got a hell of a mountain to climb in terms of educating people what EVs are still today and amongst car guys. And then, you know, it was the question is how far are we with EV education in South Africa? And the answer is we've got a way to go, because the next question that popped up was like, well, you know, Eskom can't handle if we have everybody on EVs in the country. And I was like, well, let me just do some mathematics around that, because, you know, mathematics rules the world. Eskom can generate, what, 47 – I'm bashing the microphone here because I'm so excited – 47,000 megawatts at a time. 47,000 megawatts, right? We have
no, that's, I think that's installed capacity. I think on a good day, it's probably generating around 30 or 32,000 megawatts.
Well, it claims, yes. Okay, but we have, what, 13 million cars on the road, right? So if we plug all of them in at the same time and charging them at, what, 2 kilowatts each, then Eskom might notice the fact that there are a couple of cars plugged into the grid. At the moment, we have, what, maybe 10,000 cars on the roads that actually can plug in? So the point of the matter is, until we get to a level where Eskom's even going to register so much as a rounding error or a blip in the demand placed on the grid by electric vehicles, you and I are going to be long dead. It's going to take a long time before that happens.
The other point, of course, William, is that many EV drivers install solar at home and they charge their cars on the sun, don't use Eskom at all. And, of course, the guys who are reliant on Eskom are probably charging their cars in a smart home environment where their car is getting charged between 2 and 5 in the morning.
Exactly. Exactly. And yeah, so, I mean, it's just interesting comments like that I thought would be so – they're concerns. They're legitimate concerns because they're coming from people who are getting engaged in the conversation at least. But, you know, it's just so fundamentally fundamental, really, to the actual EV question that we've got a lot of work to do.
I guess it's also the fact that EVs are so uncommon in South Africa still that people just don't have real-world experience with them. And, you know, once the sales of EVs start to go up, and they are now, finally, because of the price of diesel and the price of petrol after the Iran war, until that happens, we're going to continue to see these misconceptions being spread around the market because people just haven't had real world experience with these things.
And it comes down to the pricing. You nailed it exactly, and the pricing's coming. But now we get the new Cherry Q coming, which will be under 500,000. In fact, under 400,000. In fact, you can pre-order them already now. Today, you can go and pre-order a Cherry Q, which is an all-electric. The new JQ J5 is coming, the all-electric. The iCar's just launched. So the number of electric vehicles that are already available in South Africa and that are still coming is escalating enormously. And we'll get into the Chinese revolution a little bit later on, because there's some very interesting numbers here that are sliding under the radar that are now suddenly coming to the fore. But in terms of new cars, for example, yesterday I was at the new Atto 2 DMI launch. Okay, this is a BYD, so it's a small crossover SUV, sort of maybe a little smaller than the the Corolla Cross, the Suzuki Grand Vitara, or the new Suzuki Across, for example. Around about that size, maybe a little bit smaller than the T-Cross, maybe same size as the T-Cross, the V-Dub. But what this is, it's being a DMI, it's not a full battery electric, it's a dual mode, DM stands for dual mode.
PHEV.
It's a plug-in electric hybrid, yeah. And so plug-in electric hybrids, you plug it in, you charge a bigger battery than you do if you just have a mild hybrid, which has a battery that collects your regen from your braking and charges from your engine. The plug-in typically gives you a bigger battery, gives you a longer range. And This one comes with a 7.8 kilowatt hour battery and around about 40, maybe 50 kilometers of EV only range. And I'm afraid that's just not enough for South Africa, I don't think. I think it's a little small. I think it will have some application for the office commute. You know, there are not too many of us that live further than 20 k's away from our office.
So what's the pricing of this, William?
So pricing on this, we're looking at starting at 449,000, 450,000 and going up to 490,000. I had thought initially that the 490,000 would be the slightly bigger derivative, which comes out with an 18 kilowatt hour battery, but that's not coming to South Africa from what I understand. Right. There's been one or two different spec sheets from BYD on this, but the 18 kilowatt hour hasn't actually presented a presence yet. That would give you around about 90 kilometers of EV-only range, which I think is more workable in the South African contest. But, you know, so it's one of those where we've become so spoiled with Chinese pricing that we're expecting them to give us more and more until we get everything for nothing, you know. So more and more for less and less. But the pricing is maybe it's a little bit higher, but you do get a lot of spec on the vehicle. I mean, it's typical. Throw everything at it, and the differences between the two, you know, it's you get a powered tailgate, and you get a panoramic sunroof, and. But the fundamental basics on the car are already quite an impressive list on the 450,000 rand version.
And what engine is it paired with?
It's a 1.5-liter normally aspirated petrol motor. Okay. Well, I mean, if it's Chinese and has an engine, there's always a 1.5-liter motor.
Usually a turbo,
it makes a very interesting. Well, there you go. It makes a very interesting comparison with the Chang'an Uni S. So the Uni S is a 1.5-liter turbo, and it's round about in that pricing bracket, but it's got a lot more power, 138 kilowatts. This Atto 2 has. It claims 122, but you got to understand that it's 122 with the petrol engine running at full tilt and the electric motor running at full tilt. So it doesn't have that punch that the Uni S has when you power it up. It takes a little while for everything to spool up to full power. So
Think about the range on this, though. It's about 40 kilometers, maybe a bit over 40 kilometers from its 8 kilowatt hour battery. It's a very small battery. I'd love to see some figures on what the average commute distance is for South Africans. I mean, how far does your average South African drive in a car to get to work and get home again? I'd imagine it's probably around the 40K mark on average. So, you know, as a commuter, if you don't want to pay for petrol or diesel, you're going to save a lot of money driving this thing because you're going to get to work and get home in most instances, or in the average case, without having to engage that petrol engine at all. So maybe it might do more. Maybe more successful than we think it's going to be at this price.
This is you're exactly right. And of course, you know that 45 liter tank at 5 liters 100 or 5.4 whatever it is they claim is going to do 800, 900 Ks, maybe more. So, you know, you can literally jump into it and drive down to Durban without having to worry about anything, you know. So this is where I think the plug-in hybrids are really a logical stopgap for South Africans. I mean, we've seen the research from overseas that says, you know, dear customer, you bought a plug-in hybrid. Why didn't you buy a full battery electric vehicle? And the answer comes back as, well, I was worried about the range. And then what are you going to buy next when your plug-in hybrid has reached end of life? 90% of them are going straight away to BEVs. And interestingly, 80% of them said we should have gone to BEVs straight away because we just didn't know how good the charging infrastructure and how our lives would actually integrate with BEV straight away. Given the option of going back to buy a PHEV or buy a BEV, 80% would actually go straight to a BEV, which is interesting.
Here's a question for you, William. Let's stick with BYD for the moment. They've got the Dolphin Surf, which is a pure EV in this market. Now they've introduced a similarly priced model here in a PHEV. If you were going to market now to buy a cheap and cheerful new energy vehicle from BYD, and these are your two choices, which one would you get and why?
Oh, Surf, immediately. No brainer. Hands down. So, and I say that from K can I say I'm sitting from an enlightened point of view? Because, you know, we've done a lot of work in this space, and it's interesting you mentioned whether I'm going to buy a dolphin surf. It's coming very close to that, because my wife is having a divorce with her car at the moment, so she's very keen on an EV, so it's coming sooner than we think. So the point of the matter is that the range side of things no longer concerns me, doesn't worry me at all. I'm not by nature a competitive person at all. I really am not. I'm not. But someone mentioned to me that they've done some statistic gathering, and on their Volvo, they've got down to a running cost since they owned the car, and they've had it a year, and they've done, I think, about 15,000 Ks. I stand under correction, but it's around about that. They've got a total cost per kilometer of energy cost, in other words, just electricity versus petrol, of 4.
For what?
Cents per kilometer.
4 cents.
4 cents
per charging kilometer. On solar, or is that charged via Eskom?
Yes. No. Of course, he's got solar at home, and he charges off that. So I'm afraid that's a bit of a red rag to a bull, because I could have beat that. 3.5 cents.
So you're getting a dolphin and 40 solar panels, are you?
Hey, well, exactly. My chair has got my fingers scratching, and because I'm like, let me at it. I've got to beat that. So you know, it's a case of if real world statistics bear out that a use case can be made. Admittedly, yes, you've got solar, and it's a fairly big solar installation that he has, bigger than mine. But man alive, that's a challenge.
That's the way to do it,
and it's one I would really like to put to the test. Mm-hmm. The other one, the big challenge, of course, is that I don't know if you remember the guys that brought us this little minor scandal called Dieselgate that occurred somewhere in Germany to some. Some many. Oh, I didn't say that. it happened. They now having nothing better to do with their lives are bringing us another scandal, saying that you know plug-in PHEV specifically are claiming up to 5 times greater carbon savings than they actually deliver in the real world. And the only way you're going to increase your carbon footprint is by burning more fuel. So in other words, they're saying PHEVs are 5 times less efficient than what the manufacturers claim. So that's a very interesting conversation in and of itself, because when we look at EV range, we've got all different standards that we can apply to our EV range. So if we use a WLTP range and we say that a car has a 100-kilometer WLTP range, we can roughly say that in the real world it will equate to 90 or 85 or 80 kilometers, but it'll be consistent across all OEMs. The same standard is not true when you're looking at plug-in PHEVs, because the battery sizes differ, you know, the charge rates differ, the fuel tanks differ, the engines differ. So there's a hell of a lot more variables in the equation to come up with a fuel rate per 100 kilometers. So the interesting question there is that if we take a PHEV, say, for example, the new RAV4 that claims 1.5 liters for 100, I don't know what they claim, but whatever it is, how does that actually map out in real world usage? Are you able to achieve that? Are you able to better it? Under what conditions is it that you're able to better it? Under what conditions is it when it doesn't match those standards? For example, if you're driving the car down to the coast and back. And if you average it out, where are you actually sitting in this? Because those are important conversations to have. You know, if you're claiming 1.5 liters per 100, but the actual real world return is 3 liters per 100, you're 100% wrong on your claim. And so I think it's a brave new world, and data gathering, which is what engineers like me love. We love data gathering. Is going to come to the fore in terms of how things actually perform in these things. It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. So
it really depends how people drive them, of course.
Of course. And I mean, the trouble with these PHEVs is that generally they've got a lot of power. So, you know, the attraction with the right foot is strong. So, I can drive economically. I just generally don't. Life is too short. You must have some fun. And yeah, there's I think there's going to be a lot of technological impact and crossover coming into new cars in general as we go. And it's Volvo and Gemini, for example, that are getting together in a new I don't know, unholy matrimony or holy matrimony. I'm not entirely sure, but you know, I suppose it depends on your point of view of how you regard Gemini. But Volvo is integrating with Gemini. So now you're seeing Gemini tech inside your Volvo. Just think about what that means. It's taking AACP, Android Auto, Apple CarPlay, to a whole new level. So you're not just talking to Android Auto. You're now talking to Gemini, an actual AI in your car that I think opens up a whole new level of, hey, Volvo. It's going to be like, hey, Volvo, what was your earlier example? Take me to the pub and solve world peace for me so that I have something to talk about with my friends when I get there.
Now, how does this differ, William, from I mean, I've got an iPhone, and it's recently I've got Gemini and ChatGPT, et cetera, all popping up on Apple CarPlay in the last month or so. I think there was an update to the iOS operating system that allowed for that. Is it just going to be an app on the Volvo screen, or is it a more fundamental integration of Gemini into the driving
That's
experience?
That's a great question. That's a great question. I don't have an answer for you on that. My understanding is that the AI integration is more along the lines of enhanced, almost like an app, really, in the car. Mm-hmm. But personalizable to you. So in other words, it understands who you are. It's coming. I guess it's going to try and become like a Jarvis, you know, from the Avengers, dear old Iron Man's assistant. And you know, it's certainly going to help, I think, in terms of when you're sending voicemails or WhatsApp texts whilst driving, which you shouldn't do because that's how you get undertaken. It'll make that process a bit more natural and intuitive, perhaps.
I just hope they're not going to integrate this with the navigation system, because we all know that these AI chatbots and tools hallucinate. So is it going to hallucinate your directions? Turn left at the next intersection onto the highway, and you turn left and you drive into a river. And whoops, I meant right.
or your shortest destination is straight over this cliff.
Yes, exactly.
You know, you have the visions of Wile E. Coyote, and that's you. I don't know. But I mean, you know, they speak about, you know, sort of curating your audio experience, for example, which is, it speaks to the AI determining what sort of mood you're in by how you drive, and then it plays your music accordingly. And I mean, there's only so much Iron Maiden, AC/DC that I can listen to, frankly. So I don't particularly want it in control of my music. If it wants to suggest things, I'll allow that. But yeah, so one wonders how these things are going to pan out, and what degree of sheer blunt force trauma processing power AI is going to bring to the driving experience. I mean, I guess it's a natural enhancement from autonomous driving, and whether AI and autonomous driving are going to overlap each other, synchronize and learn from each other.
Yeah.
I guess that's part and parcel of the process.
For sure. Interesting times. It's going to be interesting
brave
to watch
new
this.
World.
Yeah.
It is. And speaking of autonomous driving, I love the way we segue these things. We're so good at this now, Duncan. We're slick. Tesla's in Africa. It's in Africa. I'm so happy. I really,
there is
really
the wrong end of Africa, right?
I've got to go to Morocco to do it. So, I mean, it's fascinating. And it's one of these things that I confess I missed. I didn't know that the supercharger network has been established in Morocco and has been started there since 2021. I'm five years out of date. They've expanded into Casablanca, Tangier, Rabat, Fez, Marrakesh, and Agadir. There's superchargers throughout that structure in Africa. And we're kind of sitting there going, what's a Tesla? It's kind of like it's a little bit of I don't want to say a slap in the face, but it's an indication of the fact that the world's premier, one of the world's premier electric car manufacturers, just isn't in there. And I know it's the whole Elon Musk story and. Mm. But, you know, we got to get over ourselves. We need to EV, we need to catch up. We've got a lot of, as we've demonstrated earlier in this episode, we've got a lot of education to happen with EVs. And, you know, Teslas, love them, hate them, they are exciting cars, you know, and one of the ones that I think would do well in South Africa, actually. So, we've got to go to Morocco to get them. Yeah, we just got to go to Morocco to get them. Yeah. That could be interesting.
You can just drive it back from Morocco. I mean, there's no oceans in the way. You could just drive it back through the jungles of the DRC.
Exactly, and we can have our with any luck, they'll have Gemini integrated into that too. Plot a route, avoiding all potential conflicts for us. It'll drive us into the sea. I don't know. we'll have
the rainforest. And,
exactly, and see how they go. And then I just wanted to touch on whilst we're discussing where South Africa is, and you know, there some things that really are head scratching moments. We touched briefly in the last episode about the India and EU signing trade deals, and India now exporting cars into the EU at much reduced trade tariffs, and how that's going to overlap with our export markets going into that, and whether we're going to have some trouble from that. But ITAC finally have actually promulgated some tariffs on, wait for it, are you ready, battery electric vehicle minerals. So, what this incredibly complex topic appears to be to me is that as we roll out our APDP2, which is our automotive procurement development program and what have you that we use to underpin our OEM industry and underpin our tariffs and make sure that we're on par and that we're doing the right things, is that ITAC have finally figured out that you do need minerals in batteries and that you should probably not tariff the hell out of these things if you want to make batteries locally. And we'll have a chat about the upcoming interview that I've done with Hidden on whether battery manufacturers actually going to come to South Africa. And the opinion there is that it can come to South Africa. We just need to partner with the correct technological people who have the tech to be able to do it. You know, it makes sense that you want a partner who understands how battery tech work. And I'm very nervous of us manufacturing cells in South Africa for the simple reason that if the Europeans, with all their sophisticated first world tech, can't get it right, and you watch Norvolt going bang, that's a risk. It really is a risk. Mm. And to establish a high-tech processing facility that takes a long time to pay back is very expensive to put in there and requires volume and scale at a unprecedented level to make it turn a profit into our total EV market of, what, 10,000 cars. You know, we need to get our EV sales going to the point where we can actually take up some of these batteries and use some of the tech in our storage capacity, not only in EVs but obviously in static installations as well.
So you've got that interview coming up with Hiten Palmer. He's from the Electric Mission, an interesting non-profit organization that is doing its very best to promote electric mobility in South Africa. We'll be running that interview, which William did on the Tech Central show, our sister podcast. So if you're interested in keeping an eye out for that, do subscribe to the Tech Central show or keep an eye on it on Tech. Keep an eye on Tech Central for that interview. It's going to be coming up in the next week or two.
Fascinating things, yeah. And then, speaking of fascinating things, we get to the mad Chinese car segment. My favorite
section of the show. This is where I need to put some pictures on the screen. There we go.
What are the Chinese doing next? So here we go. It's not a Range Rover. So this is, in fact, an XPeng GX, the new luxury. It's a Range Rover, but at, like, I don't know, half the price, quarter of the price. Do you want to go lower? $47,000 for the big one.
Wow.
The really big one. and $32,000 for the entry level one.
Take us through the specs.
Big, massive, enormous. It is 7-seaters. It's the increasingly populated segment of the upper section of SUVs. So it's really, it's taking on Range Rover and, you know, sort of, I won't go so far as to say, you know, the big Bentley or the big Lambo, but we're not going to be too far off that. And not to be outdone, let's go to BYD, who've brought out this thing called, and I, you know, someone really needs to talk to them about their naming, but this is called the Great Tang. Great Tang.
Where but do they get these
There's
names
nothing
from?
Not great about it. I mean, 1,000-volt architecture,
wow.
1,500 kilowatts of charging, and 600 miles of range.
Good
wrapped
grief.
Up in a thing of joyless ugliness. It's just
it's very
terrible.
Ugly. It's very, very ugly.
It's terrible. I'm sure in the flesh it's going to be beautiful. But again, look, this is one of these things that is absolutely enormous. It's huge. And it's one of these cars that completely electric is just going to knock the spots off everything else that's just not Chinese in terms of pricing. It's madness. So these things are coming out at an ever increasing rate of speed. And what's happening now is that the Chinese are now starting to take over that segment of the market where they haven't been before, and that's to the really high-end luxury. There's only one segment that's left, and that's the small.
Before you carry on, I'm just having a look at some of these pictures.
It's next level. It has foot massages.
Is that a TV screen for the rear occupants? Yes, it is.
Yep. Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
And is there pricing on this, William?
I haven't seen as yet, but I would imagine it's going to be similar to the XPeng, and they are talking at around about starting at $58,000. So it's reasonably on the upper end of the XPeng, which is $47,000, about $10,000 more.
Beautiful.
But
it's really beautiful.
The spec levels will vary. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Ugly on the outside, beautiful on the inside.
We're coming after ultra luxury. And then of course, you know, we've seen what Denza have brought out in the super sports car. So, you know, the Ferrari Luce versus the Denzing 1,000 horsepower, four-seater, I think it's a two-seater sports car, capable of doing 350 kilometers an hour. I mean, you know, these things are nuts. And then Denza's brought out this thing. Okay, so the other two are kind of like just big SUVs, but this is mad, mad Chinese. So what this thing can do is it can lift any one of its wheels off the ground and then drive on the other three. So, you know, again, the question that always prompts into my mind when you see these things is why? And it's kind of like, because you can, I guess. I mean, it's just, it's next level. And, you know, so it just gives you an indication of the levels of control that the Chinese are building into their vehicles. If you can think of it, they can probably do it. I mean, it's just
that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
that is ridiculous.
Lift any wheel anywhere you like, drop it down, and pick it up again, and
that's
drive
a nice
hole
party trick.
perfect for potholes.
Exactly. That would be very useful while you're out 4x4ing. It's actually a great feature.
Yeah,
for
there you go.
4x4 crowd.
You're going over a really big whatever it is. You know,
yeah.
There you go. You can do it. it's just nuts. And then you know the world of EV is an interesting one, because you know we have to have a moment of silence, because if you get your strategy right, EV is cool. If you get your strategy wrong, it can go pretty horrible pretty quickly. And we have to have a quiet moment of silence for Honda,
mm-hmm.
because Honda's no longer doing EVs. They've pulled out of their latest EV launch, and it looks like Honda's just going to stop making. They're just getting out of it completely. So the ZDX, the Acura, which is a GM product, is not happening. The RSX, which is replacing it, is not happening. So I don't know what Honda are doing in terms of EV. It just seems to me like their strategy is just not getting it right. And I think that it's going to be one of these that we need to watch, just see where the Japanese are going generally. I mean, Toyota have released the BZ4X, Nissan have had the Leaf, Honda have really done very little in the EV space. And Honda's there for the small, compact, ultra-reliable Japanese market. You know, that's their thing. They need to jump onto the EV bandwagon and get something right. But they just don't seem to be capable of it at the moment. So Honda, come, we need to get this thing right. We need to get this thing right because I love Hondas. I drive one. It's my favorite car.
I mean, if you don't have an EV strategy, you don't really have a strategy for the future, do you?
Well, this is the worry. So, you know, I'm pretty sure Honda are doing something. What it is, we'll have to wait and see. Earlier on, I said
we were talking what are we reviewing this week, William?
Well, we're not reviewing anything, but we're going to review car sales because, you know, that's a topic that keeps everyone on the edge of their seat and excites the audience to a very high degree.
I'm looking at the show notes and I think nothing, and I'm thinking, I haven't heard of a car called a nothing. You mean nothing?
didn't have a car to review in the interim, but the nothing. The nothing,
your show notes are confusing me.
Well, it does sound like it could be a car coming out of China.
Nothing, yes, nothing EV.
off you go. But I was going through and trawling through the car sales stats for May. And May is an interesting month because, you know, you look at it and Toyota's way ahead and they've sold 10,667 vehicles, and Suzuki sold 5,546 in second place, and Volkswagen sold 5,295 in third place, which is all kind of like, you know, pretty much where they've always been. And then, you know, you scroll down, you see Chery's done 2,569, and the Motor's done 1,369. It seemed to like 69's old Chery. And then Jetta has upset the party by doing 2,020. And you look at this and thinking, but okay, just let's hang on a second, because Chery, Jetour, Omoda, Jaecoo are all part of the Chery group.
Uh-huh.
And if you add all those up, guess how much you get to? 5,958, which puts them in second place.
Wow.
Total sales in South Africa.
Wow.
Second place. Under one
of Suzuki
brand. Ahead of Suzuki. Okay. Mm. So that's just to give you an impact. And we're not even including the Lepus sales, which are not reported in that group. So they're not just second by a bit, they're second by a lot. And at almost 6,000 vehicles, I'm just thinking, how long will it be before they overtake Toyota? Because the trajectory at the rate at which they've achieved market dominance has been nothing short of stellar, and it's something to watch. It's one of those that you kind of keep an eye on it, and then all of a sudden, wow, these numbers are now starting to make a real impact, and hence the fact that Chery's taking over the Nissan factory and starting to make cars locally now becomes really important. It becomes very interesting to watch and see who's doing what, where, and how they're going to get their local content values up and.
Toyota's been number one in sales in South Africa for decades, hasn't it?
Yep. Hmm. Yep, and they will be for a while. It's going to take Chery a while to catch them. But the speed at which they're doing it and the speed at which their gap is beginning to close is one for the books. And given the fact they're going to start making Buckies locally, which is a big chunk of our local sales, the writing is on the wall. This is going to be a fight.
So William,
with interest.
Do you have your buzzers lined up? Because it's time for my favorite segment of the show. Hot or not. We're starting with this new Toyota FJ. Tell me about it.
Yeah, it's the FJ Cruiser. And
this does not look like an EV.
It is not an EV. It is, guess what? It is powered by Toyota's, guess what? 2.8-litre diesel. Why? Because Toyota have got that 2.8-litre diesel and they've had great success with it and they're going to continue using it until, well, I guess until they don't. And this is the new FJ. And remember the FJs when they first came out? Dreadfully controversial cars at the time because they were, you either liked them or you hated them. And this is unmistakably an FJ, and I quite like the looks, I have to say. It's unmistakably an FJ, and slap bang in the family. And it's been a long time since we had an FJ. I mean, the original FJs are almost 15, 20 years old now. Must be somewhere around about there. And I beg your pardon, it's a 2.7. That's in this vehicle. It's not the diesel. But guess what they cost?
No idea.
Okay, it's a 2.7 petrol engine. Does that help you in the costings?
I would guess maybe around 1.3.
No, it's much smaller than that. It's 714,000 rand for the entry level one.
Going up to
780 for that. I think what Toyota have done here is they've unpacked themselves a world of pain. Because why would you buy a Fortuner over this?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Fortuner's got 7 seats. Yeah, maybe if you count those funny things they put in the back of it. But I really like the look of this. I really do.
I actually don't know much about this FJ Cruiser. How good is it as an off-road vehicle?
No idea. I haven't driven it. But, you know, it's not going to be rubbish. It's really not going to be rubbish. It's 4x4. The VX spec is 761,000, just for reference. VX with Toyota is a bit more luxury. But the fun thing with it is that's probably why they haven't put the diesel motor in it, coming to think about it, is because you get that in the Fortuner. But I think the looks of this thing are sexy as hell. That's got a lot of
speed. I like the way Toyota's using their name in full on the front of the vehicles now. It actually looks quite good.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. I'm giving this
all right. BYD Asso 2.
Oh
yeah, we've got a rate first. Yeah, hot is good.
You've got to give it a pack.
I'm getting ahead of myself.
The Asso 2 DMI. For me, this is a case of close, but no cigar. You know, that 40-kilometer range, I stand to be proven wrong on this car. I think BYD may well do that they may well get a lot of the office commuters jumping into this car, because looks-wise, it's unmistakably it's BYD. It's unmistakably Chinese. It's got a lot of creature comforts in it. It's quite comfortable on the open road. It's not going to shoot any lights off in the performance stakes, but you know that's not what these vehicles are about. Decent sized boot, decent rear space. It's pretty good. I just wanted a bit more range from my PHEV. But if you
get
into
your car,
you
go to work.
Yeah, we drove it around the block for a couple of Ks.
And your thoughts?
Not an extended test. Yeah, it's comfortable. It's composed. It does everything well. You know, so it's got a decent chunk of rubber on it. Decent ride quality. It'll handle potholes, and visibility out of the car. Actually, I must say, visibility on the car was really really good. So I think that if you're going to do your 20 Ks home, 20 Ks to work, 20 Ks home, plug it in when you get it home. Get home and then repeat process Monday to Friday, and you know. Maybe do your 40 Ks on the weekend. Maybe I'll be proven wrong in the sales stakes. I'm disappointed there wasn't an 18 kilowatt hour version derivative in a 90 K range. So for me, it's kind of like it's not quite hot. It's almost there.
Between hot and meh.
Yeah, I'm going to err on the hot because I think you're right. It may surprise in the sales.
In the sales.
But I won't be surprised if it doesn't. I won't be surprised if it does. I'm sitting on the fence. And then, of course, we talked about this last week. That launched. Controversial in terms of its looks. Everyone's sort of like, you know, sort of quite divided on the iCar. And it's one of those where They've actually released two versions of it. You've got the Ike 23, which is this one, and then you have the V23, which is this one, and then you've got the O3T. So I don't know what the models, but the O3T is a much squarer thing. So this one is, from a looks point of view, is really interesting. Starting at 520,000, going to 670. So for the dual motor version, it's a big jump between the two. But I think the 520,000 rand vehicle is probably going to be the one that sells, and I quite like the looks. I'm surprising myself in this because I really didn't think that it would grow on me. But the more I look at this car, the more I actually quite like it. And
I don't think I'd get it in orange, and it looks a little bit plasticky to me.
Oh really? So where are you?
Not
quite hot
on the price. I'd probably lean towards hot on this one rather than meh, but it's definitely not super cool.
So yeah,
I'll go hot, but it's a reluctant hot.
Okay. No, I think it's cool. I'm sold on the looks, and I think there's also a degree of personalization you can do on the car. You can replace bits and trim bits on it and make it.
That's
make
it selling, one of its selling points, I believe. Yeah, yeah.
Which I quite like.
I just wouldn't get it in like orange.
Look, I'm a big fan of the slate. I must be honest, which has taken that to a whole new level. But we're not getting the slate here, so Amazon, please let us have the slate. We want it. I think this is as good as it's going to get until the slate gets here. So I quite like that. And then the last car we've got on Hot or Not is, of course, the famous Tula, the off-road EV. And this is now made its appearance officially. And I have to say, I think that they've built this thing like a brick bleep house.
Where has it actually been deployed so far? Where can you actually go see it in action?
So they've literally just homologated it. They've literally just got it off the starting blocks. Launch is planned for sometime in August, so hopefully they'll have a couple available for that. And it's a very, very specialist vehicle serving a very, very specialist niche market, that of game viewers. But it's been done very, very cleverly. And
just take us through the specs again.
Well, what do you want? Massive. Stupendous, enormous. It's 2.6 tons, and that's the maximum weight for a road-going car. And they're battling to get it down to 2.6 tons because the chassis on this thing is built to take a Rhino charge. It's built to outrun a Rhino. It's got two 300-kilowatt motors on it, and not quite 600 kilowatts of power because the battery pack doesn't supply all that. But it's dual motor. There's a quad motor version in the works coming up for really extreme off road. That would be, I don't know where you'd need a quad motor, but they're building one anyway, and up to 12 people in a configuration. All the seats are customizable. You can have heated seats in it. Comes with a kitchen on board because, it's EV. You can plug everything into it. And it's built as a game viewer. So it has four doors on each side. So you can literally open four doors and get into the thing. The seating is staggered so that you're not having to try and look over somebody to see the view in front of you. The roof is sufficiently high that you can stand in the vehicle. The front windshield folds down. You can have a game spotter seat put onto the front. It's built from the ground up as a game viewer first. That is utterly silent. And I mean, you can't even hear the motors when they're running. It's staggering. As far as a specialist vehicle goes, you can hear I'm gushing. I can't sing its praises highly enough because it's a South African story. It's entirely built and developed in South Africa by South Africans that make a plan. They've just innovated and fixed and done and redone, and 9 years later we've got this thing going. So it really is
nine years in development. Wow. So is this a hot or a super cool?
Oh yeah, no, it's super hot. It's super hot. It's just I think there's nothing I don't like about it. And from the fact that it's as I say, because it's all South African, you get a little shiver going down your spine. It's just we did something really, really cool.
That's very
and
cool.
I think they're gonna sell
cool. local innovation.
By the pantload. Because yeah. it once you've been in one and you've just actually literally driven around the parking lot in absolute silence, and you can hear the little birds in the trees in an office parking lot in Sandton, immediately tells you this is special, and that for me was the thing. It was just literally driving past a tree and hearing the bird tweet, and you're kind of like, ah, that's exactly what it's about, and that's for me makes it very cool.
Coming to a game reserve near you soon, no doubt.
I think so. I really do. And there's Tula will run you through all the very clever back end stuff that they've done that integrates into the vehicle as well. But we'll cover that in Wasps and Wheels season 2, I think, because great. There's a lot to cover there. But and I think that's that a great place to end the season. I think it's a good news South African story, and everyone's happy about that.
That is indeed a wrap of season 1 of What's in Wheels. If you've got any feedback for us, wheels@techcentral.co.za. We've had a few mails over the last few weeks. Let us know what you'd like to see in season 2. We are planning to make some changes to the show, so get your feedback in, and we very well may incorporate it into future episodes of this upstart. I'm going to call it an upstart motoring show. but we've got lots of things, lots of ideas, lots of things planned. So I'd love to hear your feedback. wheels@techcentral.co.za. Of course, if you're watching this on YouTube, which you probably are, hit the subscribe button and hit the bell icon and never miss an episode when we next go live from Prince William in Johannesburg and myself down here on the Southern Cape Coast. Until What's in Wheels episode 2, happy motoring.
Thank you, Duncan. Cheers.